Thanks, Dr. Pete.
Okay, for those of you sitting at tables, I want you to answer this question. What does it mean to be a friend of a city? What does it mean to be a friend of a city? Turn to the person beside you and give them the answer.
This is what it means.
And help yourself to the chocolates in the middle. They're not for decoration, they're for consumption. Okay, what's the answer? How would I know that you are a friend of your city? Because you wear their football jersey? How? Because you vote for their mayor? How would I know? That's the question. I'm looking for your answers. Shout out your answers.
Partnership.
So how would I know you're in partnership with your city? The city changes, but what? How would they know that I am a friend of my city? John would say, because you feed them. Someone who feeds a city, oh, they've got to be a friend of a city. Someone who protects a city, that's the friend of a city. What else? So how could I show my city love? Someone who speaks hope and encouragement and catches people being good. That's pretty cool. Tells good stories about your city. When someone tells you, whines about what's wrong with England or what's wrong with this and what's wrong, you tell them, hey, did you hear about this? Did you hear about this? Did you hear about this? And they're like, oh, that's a really good one. What else?
Takes part.
So engages in the city. So rather than just sits at home and watches Bethel TV, they're actually engaged in their local church and engaged there. Very good. Beautiful. That's a really good answer. You win the prize. I didn't know I had a prize. This is you have to stand up, say your name and your city. Anything that I do that adds value, that's being a friend of a city. Are you married?
Yep.
Yep. So you're a friend of your wife?
Yes.
So you add value to her? That's good. This is a gift for your wife then.
You.
Well done. That book's about dreaming with God, the practice of dreaming with God. It's not some airy fairy thing that you did last night. It's what we do every day. When we create, we represent God. As my friend says, that's worship. When you create, that's worship. Because that's what he is, that's who he is, that's his nature. So how do I do that? Because anybody that's over the age of four, is anyone in the room over the age of four? You know that when you dream and you've got a dream, that it's challenging, it's difficult. So how do I turn that dream into practical action steps and then deal with the challenges along the way? That book's that'll help you. It's written with one of the leading life coach trainers in the States. Super full of practical activities to walk you through the journey of dream with God, unlock what your heart is, what his heart is through you, turn it to practical action steps, and then deal with the challenges along the way. So grab that. This morning, I want to talk about build my city. Isaiah 45 is this story about this king called Cyrus, and that God spoke to him and prophesied over him, I believe it was 400 years before he was born, and said, there's this king that's going to rise up, said him by name, and he will build my city, not for price or reward. That's what Cyrus did. And that became, are you aware of the Cyrus canister, the Cyrus document, which became the founding document of the United Nations? That's phenomenal what's happened. History with God is just unbelievable. But except you've got to, I'm not allowed to say that, am I? Anyway, what's the point? He's spoken to us about build my city. And now it's no longer, I'm not building Jerusalem. We are the city of God. It's people. It's a living city, living stones, which is the culture, the value, the name, the nature, representing God in everything we do. We established that. So last night was all about how do I engage? I'm called to be a citizen of heaven, which means I access the resources of heaven, the identity, the value, the power, the wisdom, the nature of that kingdom, heaven. And I am a citizen of earth. I am a dual citizen. How do you know someone is a good citizen? Okay, let's put it this way. What's a bad citizen? Someone who doesn't vote. Yeah, someone who's irresponsible, doesn't protect, doesn't engage in building society, but takes away from that. Someone who doesn't use their voice, doesn't engage. We're called to be citizens of heaven and citizens of earth. And when we became a citizen of heaven, it did not negate our citizenship of earth. It upgraded it. So now you have great authority, greater influence, greater power, but we need to know how to do that. If I run around and use language, that's angry language. Angry. Which is what we do. We're the army of God. We're going to take over the city. How do you think the city feels about that? Is that being a friend of a city? No. No, it's not. Geneva is a city that's used as an example of transformation. John Calvin transformed the city. How did he transform the city? With an army. No. You're not allowed to use that. That's outlawed old system, old way of doing it. We can't do that now with what we know about the name and the nature of God. So we've got to transform cities, reform cities, build cities with his mindset in a way that empowers, elevates, and builds. If it's not in the currency of love, it's not in the currency of the kingdom. The problem is love gives choice. The love gives freedom, which means I can't control you into changing. Which is the bummer with that. It would be so much easier if I just pointed a gun at you and said, repent. Because then you would obey me, or you'd pull out a bigger gun. Correct? So we've got to change our thinking and understand how God operates. So firstly, if God says, build my city, who's like, woohoo, yes! Who's like, who says, well, who am I? Is anybody else? Says, so God says, leave. So where's New Zealand? You know, the crazy, you go to America, you go to Bethel Church, and they've got this global, New Zealand's not even on it. It's like, okay, just so you, it's down the bottom on the right hand side. It's always on the bottom on the right. Oh, you guys, I love you. Look, there's two New Zealands. One of those New Zealands has orcs and wizards. That's the New Zealand that I'm from. And then go to America. Look, that's really cool, isn't it? Boop, boop, boop. So that's me. Who am I? To go from that horse, dog, I'm gonna grow up and be a farmer. A smart farmer, by the way. Not just a farmer. Smart, intelligent farmers, like English farmers. And then I end up in Redding, California. So how does that even happen? Who am I to do this? Here's point number one. Are you ready? Here's the secret. Number one. Follow the voice of God. Just write it down. Follow the voice of God. Then you don't have to be that smart because you're following someone who's way smarter than you. You're actually following the author and the engineer and the designer and the creator of the universe who knows a little bit more than us. So number one, follow the voice of God. Number two, follow the voice of God. Number three, follow... So I'm not that smart, but I'm learning to follow the voice of God and listen to your wife. That's point number 10. Okay? So there's this guy called Ed Silvoso. He's actually a doctor, but he's not a medical doctor like Dr. Pete. He's he's got a theological, and he wrote this book called Ecclesia. And Ian and Ganilla are here, and he happened to have these, and he was going to give them away, so I got them off him to give away. Who wants it? Well, first you have to tell me the four key points from the book. Actually, you guys are cheating. Here's the point. This is a fantastic book, and this is kind of like his latest book in a series of books. The first one was about prayer. One of the early ones was about anointed for business. If you haven't read that, grab it, because it'll give you an understanding of, oh my gosh, my work is anointed. It's powerful. But this is the book that summarizes all of what he's doing. It is phenomenal, give you an understanding of what your business can be as an ecclesia, as a body within an society that's called to influence and shape the values. When two or three agree in my name, it shall be done. The gates of hell shall not prevail against what? The ecclesia. What's the ecclesia? Better read the book. And super interesting, he lays this out, the four levels of believers. Who's a believer in the room? Like, we've got, there's so many unbelieving believers. You know about that? I think some days, if I'm honest, I'm an unbelieving believer. I'm signed up, I'm part of the family, but I don't believe it, or I don't access it. So four levels of believers at work. Survivalists, they're just saying, Jesus, get me out of here, please. They believe in things like the rapture. But that, you talk to Dr. Pete about that. Number two, maintainers, they work the principles. I'm going to survive. I'm going to exist. I'm going to work the principles, and the principles work for me. And they form Christian clubs in order to survive and circle the wagons. Then there's the overcomers. They access the supernatural. Here's the dangerous thing about the supernatural. If I think the supernatural is for me, so I can live a victorious life, so I can be awesome and my business conquers the world. It's like, oh, please. It's way, way more than you. It's so that you can be an effective benefit to everyone you come in contact with. But then number four, they recognize that what I'm doing is not about just seeing and experience how much God values my work. That's number one. Like, I can, oh my gosh, my work brings pleasure to God. When I run, I feel His pleasure. My greatest worship is when I take what He has given me, my gift, and then I do it to the glory of God. If I cannot sing, my greatest worship is not singing. My greatest worship is when I know what I'm called to, what I'm gifted in, and I develop that craft, and I do it to the best of my ability and do it to God. Whether that's delivering babies or teaching kids or leading a country, whatever it is, when I do that to the glory of God, that is my greatest form of worship. So just do that. But number one, that's just number one. I see and experience how much God values my everyday work. Then I partner with Him. I start to access a supernatural life. Don't skip the principles. Because if you don't understand the basic principles of business, of life, it's going to be really hard for you. But don't build your life according to the principles. They're just a foundation. I build my life based on my connection with God. Foundation of principles. They don't change. But my life is growing with God, which is changing all the time. But if I just do that, it becomes about me and my victory and my awesomeness and my business and my this, which is awesome, but it's just not enough. Because God called us to disciple nations or reform society or build cities. All of that's the same language, whatever language you want to use. It's way more than evangelism. Otherwise, Africa would be the most transformed, prosperous city, a country, nation, continent in the world. You've seen it. A million people gave their lives to Jesus. Why is the nations terrible? Because they haven't applied the kingdom to their life. They haven't gone on from, I made the decision. Are you with me? So, Can you help me give these away? You're going to help me give them away. Thank you. I want you to find someone in the room, give one to, and you have the other. And make sure you thank Ian and Ganilla. So, what are you? Where are you? Number one, two, three, or four? What's the point? I think we fluctuate. Some days you just feel like, I just want to survive. Help me, Jesus. Does anybody feel like that today? Oh, just help me. And other days, you're like pumped because God gave you a word today for your business, and you're presenting this, you're pitching this, and you walk in and it's crazy favor, and you access the supernatural, and you're like, "Ooh, I'm awesome. I am so awesome." And then you step into it and you're like, "Help me, Jesus, help me." So there's this continuum, correct? But I want to be continually growing and growing in my friendship with God through all of it, because that's the only thing that lasts. So I want to grow in that. But really, I want to say, how am I discipling cities? How am I building cities? What can I do to benefit my city? I'm going to conquer my city for Jesus. Please don't do that. Or we'll just go to some other city. Go to Antarctica. Conquer the penguins. So, what is your dream for your city? Samuel, in the book of Samuel, we read about David. David says, "You took me from following the sheep and made me the head or the influencer or the discipler of nations." I'm experiencing that. It's phenomenal. In April of this year, I got invited. So I'm from New Zealand, and I used to hate politics. I was one of those Christians. Not a very good citizen. You're not like that, right? I had to repent as I grow my understanding. Then I get invited by a friend of mine who's in government, one of the local government or state governments in America. He says, "I want you to come and I want you to open our state in prayer, the state legislature." I had to pull out my suit. I'm thinking, hang on, I'm a foreigner. That state is four times the economy of my country. And I'm opening them in prayer. And it was amazing. It's like, oh my gosh, God is in government. Most people just don't know it or believe it. And they just stand back and point the finger rather than engage, being salt, light, and good citizens. We do that, and then we go office to office to office, praying and prophesying over state assemblymen and senators. And everybody's hungry for Jesus. They don't like Christians, but they really want Jesus. I'm sure it's not English Christians. It's just, must be just American Christians. You recognize I'm teasing you, hopefully, because we've become Christians by name and not by nature. Forget about the name. Just to develop the nature of Christ in all you do, and it won't even matter what they call you, because everybody loves Jesus. So we go in and then we meet. We're supposed to have a 5-minute meeting with the CFO of that state. That state's four times the economy of my country. And it's supposed to be one of those, "Check my hands, this is my friend, this is my important friend, this is your important friend, hey, how are you doing?" One of those meetings. Well, we sit down, he walks in with his entourage, and I'm trying to be important, I'd rather be that guy on the horse. It turns into this conversation where he says, "What do you do?" And I start to tell him some of the stories of what I'm seeing God do with businesses around the world. And then he says, "So how do they deal with greed when they grow and they have this favor?" Phenomenal questions. How do you deal with greed and pride? Could you catch this? Here's the CFO. He's got an $84 billion budget that he's responsible, asking me, a foreigner, with a 5-minute meeting, how do you deal with greed? That's when your hope, wisdom sinks in. And in that moment, thank you, Jesus, wisdom. I could answer, "You don't know. You don't know what's going to happen if you have $1 billion tomorrow. The only thing you can manage is that somebody knows you. and can keep you accountable, because that's the only thing that you can work on and be responsible for. And he's like, oh, this, and he says, oh, this is such a therapeutic conversation. If you were in this environment, what would you say? Oh, I can feel the life of God on that one. But they use different language. Next thing, the door opens and his 7-year-old son comes in looking just like dad with the suit. He'd been going around office to office because he's got a wiggly tooth and he's hoping someone's going to help him pull his tooth out, but no one will touch it. It's America, they'll sue you if you get it wrong. So he just comes straight up to me, can you help? And his dad says, here, you, can you pull his tooth out? And I'm just ignorant enough to just do what I'm told. So I said, on the count of three, and on two, I pull his tooth out. Next thing, this 7-year-old, it was like he got his man card. Just this huge big hug, they're catching on camera. That was April. It was a 30-minute meeting. It was just some beautiful connection. What was I doing? I don't really know. Other than, what was point number one? Following the voice of God. And how do I be a friend of a city? Add value. So I'm adding value. How did I add value? I pulled out the tooth of his 7-year-old son. What did it do? It endeared me to the CFO, this person of influence and power. And I answered questions, not with some, well, the Bible says, or any of that, but just with a spirit of wisdom. How do you get the spirit of wisdom? By hanging around the spirit of wisdom. Who's that? Jesus. And walking in humility, saying, actually, I don't know the answers to everything, but I've got these friends who do. That was April. I'm supposed to go back next April. That 7-year-old kid is now asking for me by name. And I'm just thinking, I hope he hasn't got any more teeth to pull out. So what's your dream for your city? What's your dream for your city? Turn to the person beside you and tell them. You got 30 seconds. Specific, measurable. Okay, shh. Okay, are you ready? You're not ready. Who's got a dream for their city? Who realizes, oh, I don't have any dream for my city? It's an okay answer. Come on, be honest. Because I've got a prize for you. Who does not have a dream? Okay, because here's the real question. Now turn to your neighbor and tell them the answer to that one. Well, you just burn it. Just burn it. Burn the city. You don't know what spirit you are of. So God has a dream for your city, which is he has a future and a plan and a hope. We talk about it all the time, but we don't turn it into something that's practical and real and tangible. What's God's heart for your city? What does he see? What does he love about your city? What would he want to do? What does he see? What's the nature, the purpose of your city? What moves you? How can you translate the dream of your city into language that they can understand? Redding, California, used to be called Poverty Flats. What do you think the devil's dream for our city is? Poverty Flats. That anybody who comes to Redding, California gets, what do we call it? The Redding Shedding. It's really hard to do business in Redding. It's really hard. Oh, it's really hard, brother. You better pray. Well, at least they've got this good church. Oh, please. No. You're partnering with the wrong spirit because you haven't caught God's dream for your city. God's dream is the opposite of that. Devil comes, steal, kill, destroy. I have come that you might have life more abundantly. So here's the cheat's answer. What's the cheat's answer for your city? God's dream is life more abundantly. What would that look like? What would it look like for London to be the most thriving, life-filled city, safe, protected, economically thriving, no homelessness? They don't even need the police because the citizens are good citizens. What if we were a part of that? That it wasn't just about building a good Sunday congregation, it was about building good citizens. So how do we build? Well, that's what we want to talk about. We got a video. We'll see if this works. I'm sure that was my fault. So the beautiful thing about Reading is I get to be part of a city that's working out who we are. The history of the area that I've adopted is people came, found gold, took the gold and left. People came, found copper, took the copper and then left. People come, take the fish from the lake that's in Reading. Those trout populated the biggest lake in New Zealand. And then New Zealand gave me back. Well, that would be arrogant to think that. So it's this history of people come, see what's there, and just take it and leave. So what do you think the purposes of God are? It's the opposite. It actually becomes such a generous city. Reading is a generous city, full of life, full of an overflowing abundance of resources, that the water from our city waters the whole of California. So Reading's been struggling with who are we? Who are we? Who are we? No one or few people would go to the state of the city, a luncheon where the mayor would present that this is who we are and this is our problems. And a few years back, they changed their approach. We're going to start to talk about who we are. We are Reading. And they put this video together. This was not at a church service. This is, I think this year there were about 800 people present at the State of the City luncheon. So, and I want you to be aware, when you watch this, some of you want to move to Reading, and that's okay. But I want you to be aware of what you feel and imagine you are not a Christian at a business conference. You're a citizen of Reading, California, and you're struggling with, hey, we've got all of these different problems. What do you feel when you watch this? Okay, if we can turn down the lights. So you're just clapping another city. What do you experience? What do you feel? Hope? What else? Positive. Beauty. It's a little bit less beauty now. Some of those river trails aren't there. Inspiration. What else? The presence of God. Life. Ownership. We are Reading. This is my city. This is our city. When I look to the future, I am overcome with hope. We are mothers. We are fathers. We are businessmen. We are. This is who we are. We focus on who we are rather than who we're not. It starts to change the narrative in a city. What are you called to be? Ones who speak a narrative of hope when everyone else sees hopelessness. So has it always been like that? No. This is 2012 when I didn't know that I was supposed to talk to the reporters. There's some history behind that. Because sometimes the media are the most negative people on the... They just want to reduce what's negative because it sells newspapers. Well, we need reformers in the media world as well. And I know of some people that are starting to do that. But here's the context. The context is when I first got to Reading, I started to connect into the business. I don't know what I'm doing, but the favor of God is ridiculous. There is an unsaved president of the Economic Development Corporation. Guess where he's from originally? New Zealand. Guess what university he went to? the same as me. Guess what his background is? It's farming. Are you kidding me? Is a conspiracy. Is a New Zealand is taking over the world. You only need one. I honestly believe that God wants the city of Reading to prosper. I honestly believe it. As God starts to talk about these businesses that are starting to thrive and flourish, and they've only come to Reading because they have... The only reason they're in Reading is because of faith. They're faith-centered, Christ-led people who have chosen to plant their business in a city. Why else would they come to that place? So we track this journey with Mark, and I first meet with Mark, and we have a connection because he sees I'm a business person, he's a business person, but I'm a part of a church, so he's suspicious. What are you doing? Because in his language, there is only animosity towards Bethel. Why would that be? The Economic Development Corporation only has animosity towards the church that I'm a part of. Why would that be? Because the church that I'm a part of has only a negative reputation in the economic business community. Why would that be? Oh, because we have this ministry school with 1,000 students that then go into businesses and use the business as a place to enjoy the presence of God and start manifesting, scaring away patrons. Or they'll chase down patrons to pray for them. What does that do for business? Good for business, bad for business. Bad for business, even if they get healed, because it scares away other patrons. So is it good, is it bad? It depends on context and learning to translate what you carry. There's this history of there's only animosity in the business community towards Bethel. Over time, that started to change. When I first met Mark, he said, so what's your agenda? Good question. I said, to see the city prosper. And he says, no, but what's your real agenda? I said, to see the city prosper. Because he's thinking that I want you to come to my church because my church is taking over. Because I'm wanting a win. I'm trying to sell him something. And I said, Mark, I'm sorry. Because your experience with believers has been purely surface in order to obtain something. We're no better than poor used car salesmen. Because we have an agenda. The only reason we're your friend is so that you come to my church, sign this card, give this money, do this. I apologize. My agenda is that the city prospers. If you're asking me whether I want you to spend eternity with Jesus, that's a no-brainer. Yes, but I cannot control what you do. All I can control is what I do, which is to love and value and appreciate what the city is capable of. And pour into that. Do you think he believed me? No, I don't think so in the moment. But over time, he started to. The following year, we had our first ever Heaven and Business Forum. It's an experiment. We don't really know what we're doing, but we think God does more in business than we know. And I'm talking to my friend, because I build this friendship with Mark over time. I build this friendship, and I'm telling him what we're going to do. And he says, I'm coming. I'm like, no, you're not coming to this. This is going to be 36 business people. We've got these preachers like this guy, Bill Johnson and Danny Silk and Chris Valentin. And we've got the children come and prophesy and pray over business. And we've got these spooky old ladies called intercessors. And they'll come and create this. And he goes, no, I've got an open mind. I'm coming. So we've got 35 business people plus Mark at the first ever Heaven and Business Forum. I'm not sure. Thank you for clapping, but I'm not sure if it's clapping. It was kind of awkward. Except he forced, why did he force his way in? Wasn't that in the Bible? People are pressing their way in. I'm saying, no, you can't come. He wants to come. Why does he really want to come? Because I'm his friend and he likes me. And he's starting to realize, oh, you are true about this. But even more so because he's got these other friends or people that he knows that are influential business people in our city, and they're going. So if they're going to go, and his business is economic development, and these are economic developers, he's pushing his way in. Interesting? Well, it didn't just stop then. I start to teach in the School of Ministry a class, a heaven and business class, which is really validating and giving vision to people called to the business realm. Go for it. Who can do this? One of those sessions is how to bring God to kings, which is how to translate what we into our business community, into our community. So I teach on Daniel, and I want to give you the keys on that, on how to be a friend of a city. How? So I teach on that. But then I've got my friend Mark. His gifting is influencing and building and connecting. He knows how to influence a city. So I get him to come in to talk about the practical of how to engage with your city. Who's he talking to? Bethel School of Supernatural Ministry students doing a business class. Alongside who? Andy. What have I just talked about? I'm talked about this. A man's gift makes room for him and brings him before great people. When I develop my craft and add value, if I've got something that will genuinely add value, it'll open up doors of opportunity. But that does not give me influence, because so many believers then think that's my reason to then get onto this platform and tell you about Jesus. And then suddenly the door closes. Or they open their mouth and they're arrogant. Or they're using the wrong name. So I say, it's not just that. It's actually, he who has purity of heart and grace on his lips, the king will be his friend. Who has influence? Daniel has influence over successive kings. How? Because he was their friend. What does it mean to be a friend? It's right there. Grace on your lips, which means your speech elevates the status of those who hear you. They feel more powerful around you, not less powerful. They feel smarter around you, not dumber. They feel encouraged, not judged. That's what that means. And a pure heart, which means no agenda other than that you prosper. So who's following me doing this awesome little talk? Mark, my unsaved friend, who's the leader of the Economic Development Corporation. He gets up, and one of the students, a 40-year-old successful business person, says, hang on, I've got a question. I got a question. And he's wrestling genuinely through it. Don't we have an agenda? Don't we want God to be in charge of the city? Now, who's up the front now? I'm sitting. Mark's there. So who thinks we want, don't we have an agenda? We want God to be in charge of London. Who says yes to that? You're going, who says yes? Mark. This is Mark now, unsaved president of the Economic Development Corporation. Says, stop right there. It's the wrong question. God is in charge of the city. I'm sitting there. This is awesome. Preach it. What's the point? The point is the believers don't believe. Because if I believed that God was in charge of the city, I'd be operating completely differently. I wouldn't be running in with my weapons. Oh, I'm going to take over the city and I've got this army of God. God is in charge of the city. And I don't have to defend him or protect him or fight for him. I just got to be a friend of the city because they just don't realize God's in charge. And God is not God of judgment. That's the Old Testament. This is the God of love who's in charge of a city. He loves my city. The problem is his people don't. So what's your dream for your city again? What's God's dream for your city? So I do this leadership reading course. I connect with one of our, there's a series of different little cities around Reading. I connect with one of the chief of police of that city. And I just really like him. Because in New Zealand we don't have guns in our police and Americans do. It's cool. They have cool stuff. Body armor, guns, and really bad people. So I just really like, he's funny, I enjoy him. So I'm thinking, I just want to connect with you after this course. So how would you build a friendship with someone? You just have a coffee, don't you? Or a beer, if you're in England. A beer. Or two, or three, or four, or six. Then you become really good friends. So I reach out, hey, how are you doing? I'd love to grab a coffee with you. Shall I come to you, as in the police station, or do you want to come to me? Which I'm thinking he's not going to want to come to me, because at that time my office is, or my cubicle, is in the Bethel main campus. Or should we meet at a cafe? What do you think he would answer? Cafe. Who thinks cafe? Who thinks police office? Who thinks Bethel? You win. He said, I'll come to you. He's never been on the Bethel campus. I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be interesting. He drives up in his car. Here you go. Took a photo of it. Comes into the main administration office. Is Andrew Mason here? He's wearing body armor. He's got a... That wasn't his car. Do you know? Do you know why? It's got Dublin on the number. I don't even know. There's probably some TV. But anyway, you get the image. So I'm saying, hey, well, do you want to... He goes, oh, looking around. This is a pretty interesting place. I said, well, do you want a tour? So he's like, yeah, I have no agenda. I'm just thinking I'm just going to show him around. So, but we're walking around Bethel. So guess what's going to happen? We bump into Chuck Parry. Now, my friend, this is my friend. He is not a, he's not a church guy. Like, he's got a Catholic background. He's actually got a real respect for God. But he's not one of you crazy people. And he certainly hasn't been in contact with these crazy people. He meets Chuck. Chuck's like a 70-year-old hippie with his haircut. Just loves Jesus, man. But everybody loves Chuck because he just oozes with love. But the guy does miracles. So my friend starts to ask him questions. So what are you doing? How do you get... Like police questions. Not like, oh, you're awesome. It doesn't do that because he's a police guy. And Chuck just tells him, well, this happened, God did that, God did that, God healed this, God did... It just straight up, it was like, I'm standing there. Oh, okay. We carry on, and it carries on like that, meeting different people, until we get to the administration building. Any administrators in the room? Like, thank you, Aaron, for what you do. So we walk in. By this time, it's just fun. We're standing over the cubicles. There's Bethany and Bethany. One's the assistant to like Chris Vellerton. So first and second Bethany. And we're talking. And my friend's now asking them, so how'd you get to be here? These are police questions. Well, how'd you get to be here? Why are you here? What are you doing here? What's your qualifications? Just straight questions. And they're just answering. They're pretty powerful people. They're like, they can speak how many languages? Four languages, and they come from France, and it's kind of the same sort of thing. And they've just chosen to serve here and make these people awesome. Phenomenal gift. And I'm just thinking it's a normal conversation. He takes a step back, and he's got liquid eyes. And he says, it's so good to meet good people. For the rest of my day, I'm going to be with people that would prefer I was dead. The world is dying for hope.
and you carry more than you realize.
Don't keep it to yourself. We go from there to the prayer house. Bethel's got a 24-hour prayer house. And we go for a tour through the prayer house. And I just happened to tell him that people have been healed of fourth stage cancer as they've walked into this. And he's not scared. We cruise around a couple of times. We walk out and he's like, oh man, it feels really good in there. Can anybody use this? I said, sure. He said, do you have to be a member? I said, no. Even homeless people every now and then, we have to get them removed. And he said, so could I use it? I need a place to process after I've had a tough weekend. I said, sure. I mean, yeah, help yourself. A couple months later, I get a text. Hey, I've been using your temple. What's the point? I'm building a friendship. Why? Because the better that he does his job, the better my job is. The better he does his job, the better my city is. Are you seeing this? If I want my city to be what God's called it to be, I need his job to be awesome. How can I help him? Well, I've now worked it out. I've got hope, and he needs a friend who has hope. So who in your city needs a friend? How do you be a friend of city? You add value. It's all here. It's this stuff. 1 more minute. You become a friend. It's kind of obvious stuff. It's actually really obvious stuff. But who's God saying to you to be a friend of? So close your eyes. Holy Spirit, I ask you to bring to mind somebody right now that I could be a friend of in my city. I want their dreams to come true. I want their job to be the best job. I want to bring them hope. And I want to do it without agenda, but with pure love. So highlight to me who I could start to build a friendship or strengthen a friendship with. That you will have a picture of someone, a name. Then just say, Holy Spirit, what's one practical thing that I could do to be a friend, to demonstrate friendship with them? You got it? Awesome. Eyes open. You now have a 10-minute break. Right? 10 minutes. Coffee's there. Bathroom's out here. Book table over here so you can buy one of those books for your friend. I'm teasing you. Over the break, go and find somebody that you do not know and tell them who it is that you're building friendship with your city. And what's the practical step that you're going to do to actually move towards that? You got it? And you can ask anybody. Because we're all a part of this. We don't want to just listen. We want to do stuff. Correct? All right. Break time.